The Federal Communications Commission is scheduled to vote next week on a proposal that would raise limits on how much of the U.S. media a single company may own. Some say the current rules are outdated and a burden to broadcasters. Others say the rules protect the public's interest in diverse sources of news and entertainment. In the first installment of a three-part series on media deregulation, NPR's Rick Carr recounts the history of the public interest on America's airwaves.
In the early days of broadcasting, anyone who wanted a license just had to ask. Washington bureaucrats, by law, could not say no. Radio pioneers tended to be experimenters, educators, or crackpots, and most broadcasting was non-commercial. But in 1922, New York station WEAF changed all that when it allowed a contractor to buy time for an ad.
Visit our new apartment homes in Hawthorne Court, Jackson Heights, where you may enjoy community life in a friendly environment.
Broadcasters rushed to go commercial and filled up the radio dial.
Have you tried with me?
Tested into a place with life.
These millions of miles are run with Rio Grande cracked gasoline.
They've done it again with Glim, their new concentrated liquid that cuts dishwashing time in half.
Commercial broadcasters started to band together into networks, which decided that the government's laissez-faire attitude threatened their ability to make a profit. The result of their demands was the Federal Communications Commission. Newton Minow became its chairman during the Kennedy administration.
Because so many people were starting to broadcast and they were interfering with each other, the broadcasters went to the federal government and asked the government to regulate the broadcasting industry.
Other industrial nations opted to regulate broadcasting by having government control it outright, as the first chairman of the BBC, Lord Gainford, explained in 1923.
Broadcasting would have to be controlled by one broadcasting authority if the chaos which today is so obvious in America were to be avoided here.
In the U.S., the nascent commercial networks agreed to a kind of quid pro quo, according to former FCC chair Newton Minow. The government would limit the number of licenses it granted, and the networks would abide by a legal requirement.
To serve the, quote, public interest, convenience, and necessity, end quote. Not the private interest, but the public interest, convenience, and necessity.
For the next 50 years, broadcasters and the FCC fought over what exactly that meant. Early on, Minow says, broadcasters tried self-regulation. NBC, for example, touted its world-renowned symphony orchestra as an example of public-spiritedness.
Our concert begins as Arturo Toscanini conducts the NBC Symphony in Mussorgsky's Prelude to Covantina.
By the 1940s, government regulators were arguing for more rules to ensure broadcasters served the public interest. They specified what broadcasters had to air. A certain amount of news and community programming, for instance, or equal time for opposing political views. But those regulations became increasingly difficult to administer, according to Howard Shalansky, who teaches communications law at the University of California at Berkeley. What, for example, was the FCC supposed to make of a broadcaster who played classical music 24/7 but did no news?
It became very hard to balance these incommensurate qualitative categories. And I think the commission came to find that it was in no better position to make decisions about which broadcaster was best serving its community than the marketplace was.
Shalansky says through the 1980s, the FCC abandoned content requirements and came to rely on regulations that simply limited how big a broadcaster could get, capping the number of stations a single company could own, for example, and prohibiting newspapers from getting into broadcasting at all. Those are the rules the FCC will take up on Monday. In theory, Shalansky says the more broadcast owners there are, the better the public is served.
As long as you ensure at the broad level, at the ownership level, that there is enough diversity of editorial control and of ownership, the rest would take care of itself through the competition to serve the market demand.
But under the Reagan administration, Shalansky says even that rationale came under fire. Then FCC Chair Mark Fowler argued that the public interest was whatever interested the public. Another former chair, Newton Minow, isn't sure that that approach provides for everyone's interest.
Why do we have public parks? Why do we have public libraries? Why do we have public radio, public television? Because the marketplace does not provide service to everybody.
Current FCC Chair Michael Powell says he has faith that the market will provide. What's more, he says, he'd rather have the market decide than government. Rick Carr, NPR News.
Tomorrow, how deregulation is likely to affect communities and local broadcasters.